You are listening to Rouge, White, and Blue, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Rouge, White, and Blue CFL podcast. We're past the Labor Day holiday. We're past the midseason point, and we're talking some Canadian football from various points in the United States. Coming to you from Orange County, California, I'm Oz Davis. Joining me, as always, is my co-host out there in Wisconsin, the enemy, Joe Pritchard. Joe, how you doing this week?
I'm doing the I have Canadian money in my pocket dance today.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Tell us about that. Tell us about your annual pilgrimage to Winnipeg.
Well, 2 years in a row, I wouldn't quite call it annual yet, but I'm going to go see the Banjo Bowl. And I'm going to enjoy myself. And, you know, depending on how the game goes, I'm either going to enjoy a few beverages or a lot of beverages after the game with the Piffles guys.
Okay. I do this every year. We do the podcast. Our fellow co-host, Dr. Rouge. How you doing, Dr. Rouge?
You know, okay. This for you, Oz, must be a little bit of heaven.
How so?
Not only have your Alouettes won two in a row, but they lead the league in the not officially sponsored by the Rec Laws Long Live the Rouge standings.
Okay, great. I am glad you came in with that. And also, kudos to my Alouettes. I'm glad you came in with that because, Doc, I've been meaning to talk to you about something for like 3 weeks now. And like ships passing in the night, we never seem to do the show at the same time. So I'm going to hit you with this. Okay.
Okay.
Your favorite thing about the CFL, the Rouge.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking about this the other day, okay? The Rouge, well, some time ago. The Rouge, one of the awesome things about the Rouge for me is that it's a way to reward special teams play for, you know, other than, you know, the freakish touchdown return or the freakish turnover on the punt or, you know, something like that. It's a nice statistic for special teams. Okay, but here's what I think. Shouldn't the other side of the Rouge also be measured and tallied? So in other words, shouldn't Rouge's taken also be a statistic? And my corollary question to you, Doc, being the professor at an actual university, is this. What would be the verb for that? Would you get rouged? Would you take a rouge? How would that work? Are you buying my statistic?
I like it. And you know, this would allow me to have more statistics to throw out there during games and,
right,
and more opportunities to, you know, bombard Twitter with whatever I bombard Twitter with. I suppose the verb would be that you rouged.
You are rouged. To be rouged. To be rouged.
You have been rouged.
Okay, that's right. Like, for example, the Ottawa Red Blacks were rouged twice against Montreal.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Great.
So
great.
We could have competing statistics. Who scored the rouge and who was rouged against.
Right. And how, like, which team has been rouged most often this season? Because it seems to me that Ottawa has taken a lot of rouges this season, not just the two in this last game.
Now, one thing I will say, I mean, as much as Hugh O'Neill's punt that went out of bounds inside the 1 yard line was the ultimate in rouge denial, that was don't you go there. That was the ultimate punt. That was a beautiful punt.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. That was outstanding. We love the punters here on the Rouge, Red, and Blue. Did you, okay, when that punt happened, I was not on Twitter at the time, did you put up the Picard meme?
I actually put up what a punt, because okay. even I had to admire the sort of Picasso, Van Gogh, Monet, whatever, beauty of it.
Yeah, the aesthetic pleasure of it. Yes,
absolutely. That ball hit, and it goes out inside the one. And what was really funny is the ref puts his foot down on the 1 yard line, and you could see the two Edmonton players are like going, "It's right there, it's right there." They're trying to get the ball inside the one. I mean, you talk about like going for blood at that moment.
Yeah, that was very sweet. I wonder, I have not looked at the highlight clip of that game. I wonder if that punt is in there. It honestly should.
I would have to believe it is. Joe, were you watching the game at the time? Did you see it also?
Yeah, it was on. I don't know if I saw it real time. We've been having some issues where we get dragged behind a little bit and then kicked forward with our internet connection. So I don't remember if I saw that one or if I just caught up on Twitter with that one. But yeah, that one I was like, oh, yeah, Doc is going to love that.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. The textbook punt. Right. Okay. We've got a little bit of, I don't even know what to call it, rumors, I guess, pseudo news, rumoring. The question is Chris Rainey on the trading block? Tell me, Doc, what do you know? You're the one that brought this story to my attention.
I saw it a little bit before the three of us got ready to record this on this too hot Wednesday here in Pittsburgh. And Dave Naylor from TSN, who is normally tapped into these things pretty well, posted a tweet that suggested that at least four teams apparently have inquired about Chris Rainey from the BC Lions. Naylor says that while the Lions don't appear to be, you know, we got to trade this guy right now because, that they're at least willing to listen, based on obviously a team that's 3-6 and has some needs in other places. Perhaps Chris Rainey's days on the West Coast are numbered.
Okay, here we go. Ready? We've done this before. Joe, hot take. Who's the best fit for Rainey?
Anybody that needs a slippery punt returner, which is most teams right now.
Most teams, okay. All right.
So let's pick one that really needs a breakout guy, mm-hmm. and they really need to win games right now. I feel like Winnipeg's got a decent enough return game going right now, but mm-hmm. what about Toronto? I know Martez Jackson has the potential, but it hasn't seemed to be showing as much lately, and there's been a lot of mistakes lately on that side too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, it tells me that I'm looking at an official document from the CFL here with stats on it. It's pretty much split across the board in terms of average return yards. The best is Calgary across the board, pretty much. Surprise, surprise. But, yeah, mixed results towards the bottom. Montreal is at the bottom in a couple of categories. So there's quite a few teams who could use a decent returner. Ottawa, Hamilton, Montreal, Edmonton, Toronto. All of these teams are in the bottom of the table in the four return categories listed. So... wow, this will be interesting to see. All right, let me get a hot take on this one from you, Dr. Rouge, because I can't imagine that they would get much in players for this guy, and I think it's probably going to be draft picks. Is this a sign that Lions are bailing out right now?
Probably. I mean, you know, they're 3-6, and – you know, let's face it, I know they have a stretch of games coming up against the East, which maybe still leaves the door open for some optimism. But obviously, Manny Arsenault's gone for the year. I mean, we were talking about knee injuries and wide receivers. There's one guy that sort of slipped under the radar with all the players who were injured during games last week.
Yeah, this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I could see where trading Rainey for a middle round draft pick probably makes sense for a couple of reasons. Gives you a chance to look at somebody who's younger, probably somebody who's less expensive. You build a little bit towards the future. You know, in terms of where, you know, where he might end up, you know, if you're looking at a middle round pick, you're probably not saying, nah, not going to trade him to the West. I think any team is probably open. And, you know, if you're going to take one of those flyer ideas on something like this, let's face it, Chris Jones likes names, and Chris Rainey would be a name. So he ends up with Saskatchewan.
Can the Riders take another roster move? I mean, really? Okay, probably. It seems incredibly possible.
We're due for more craziness from there, so why not?
That's right. That's what I was thinking. Yeah, it's just like it seems plausible. It seems oddly plausible. We've also got some more news around the CFL, but most of it has to do with injuries and such, like some of the stuff we've just talked about, so we'll discuss this when we do the game roundups. I, for one, just wanted to put in a word for our Canadian Football Podcast Network buddies over there at Two and Out. Two and Out, right? That's it. Two and Out CFL Podcast. That's the name of it. Losing my mind here with Travis Kerr and Brazilian Ty. Last week's episode, earlier this week's episode, I suppose, was devoted to an interview with our excellent league commissioner, Randy Ambrosi. Well worth your listen. It's somewhat short. I'm sure Mr. Ambrosi is a very busy man, but not so busy as to avoid discussing the subject of pierogies. Yeah, always important that your CFL commissioner has a take on pierogies. I don't think we saw this from the last couple of commissioners of the CFL. So good to hear that, along with lots of other stuff about the CFL. I'd like to bring up one more point of discussion. I wasn't going to do this, but what the hell? I'm going to do this because, of course, one of the things that Mr. Ambrosi talked about in the Two and Out interview was expansion to Halifax, because we all love to talk about this in podcast land and in CFL fan land, and especially the Maritime Provinces. But I got to say this. This team, the Atlantic Schooners, they've got to be purple, right? They must be purple. That's going to be their color, right? Joe, can I throw it to you? It's got to be purple, right?
Where are you going with this? Why does it have to be purple?
Because nobody else is? All the other good color combinations are taken. And basically, this is a spinoff of this idea. I really like almost everything, and I said this on a podcast earlier this week, on another podcast, sorry guys, earlier this week, is that I like almost everything about the Calgary Stampeders and the Calgary Stampeders organization, including that they play in the Western Division. Okay? But I cannot stand it when they play in red and black, especially when they're playing Ottawa. You know, there is one team called the Red Blacks, and that is it. If the Stampeders, if they want to have a second color other than white with the red, try silver. Try gray, okay? No other team has that. But red and white, those are your colors. Red and black are the team colors. And I just couldn't think of a good combination for the Atlantic Schooners that isn't taken. Unless they want to go like black and silver, black and white.
However, the Stamps were in the league before the Red Blacks.
Yes, but the Red Blacks are called that. You know, and plus red and white is a good combination, isn't it?
I agree.
Isn't that nice?
Calgary has to wear those black and red and sort of silver-y with stripes helmets. They got to wear those all the time. Those are great helmets. Total aside.
You like those helmets, huh?
Like those helmets.
See, because
okay, well,
I remember.
See, this opinion is not shared by everybody.
I remember Joe's take on that. No.
Why don't you not like them?
Because the Calgary Stampeders had the perfect uniform look in the early to mid 90s.
Yes.
It would solve the red and black problem. The black would still be there as trim, but right. It would be trim. It would not be full of it. And those red, either red or if you want to go with the black and white stripe that were there early on in the 90s, go for that too.
Okay.
Those both look fantastic. Those both jump.
Right.
The black and the red and the silver don't pop off the TV screen to me. They're kind of a muddle.
Yeah.
That white horse in the middle of a red field with either no stripe on top or the black and white stripes, that pops. That looks fantastic.
Exactly.
Okay.
It's clean. It's clean. It's nice. The weird thing about that black-red duotone helmet is it looks different from different angles. Right, like the color scheme looks different, the pattern looks different and whatnot. And from a guy with like sight problems, I'm looking at the thing going, what is going on? You know, with this thing. It keeps changing on me. It's like a mood helmet or something. And I was just like, nah, I gotta admit, I'm not usually a traditionalist on stuff like this, but I do like the classic helmet. I like the classic clean red and white. I do like the black stripe. But 90s, right? 90s Stampeders. Right, okay. Okay, we've killed that. I didn't even mean to get on that tangent. But Halifax, purple. Come on. You know you want purple. Let's go on to last week's games because, wow, great week in Labor Day Classics. I think no one can complain about this lineup that we had.
Wait.
Yes.
Joe, did you hear him just say great week? Would he have said great week if his team had not won?
Maybe. I'm sure that he's, you know, takes Montreal losing in stride these days just because it's been so prevalent.
Did you, for example, think that all that last week was a great set of games?
If I remove myself from interest in a specific team that always flops on Labor Day weekend, yeah, I actually kind of did.
Okay, I'll agree with you in that regard because, you know, obviously my team didn't how do I put this? The defense needs some work.
You didn't classic on Labor Day, did you?
No. But let's get to the game.
You classicked until about halfway through the third quarter.
And
then, I mean, you were right there. But then,
and then they got worse than rouged, all right?
They got rouged.
They got rolled.
Rouged, whited, and blued.
Yeah, they got totally rouged.
They got pasted. Right, so, all right, let's go through the games last week. Okay, we started with Montreal Alouettes 21, Ottawa Red Blacks 11. Now, on the Wood Cookie Sawcast, I was forced into a prediction for this game. I actually took Ottawa like 38-11. So I kind of got the score half right. I would not have been surprised if that had been the score, and I probably still would have enjoyed the weekend almost as much. Because I'll tell you what, I can't tell if I'm happier about Montreal's two wins in a row and about this win, or that I'm angrier about any team in the East over the past three seasons just not able to take control of that side of the table. You know, what is going on? Everybody says that the West Division is unquestionably better, blah, 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 blah. And yet the Stamps have control of that much superior division, right? Of that four playoff team division, right? So how come nobody can just grab this thing, this East, by the throat this past few seasons and just say, I'm going to win the easy games every week and go three games up? Why can nobody do that?
Because they beat Calgary in the Grey Cup.
They'd rather
question.
back into the Grey Cup, yeah, and beat Calgary on a fluke play. This is a solid strategy, right? Oh, jeez.
No, your point is well taken. And you know, when the three of us were batting around our preseason predictions, you know, I think all of us felt that either Hamilton or Toronto was going to be the team that was going to, you know, go 12-6, something like that. win this division by probably three games, beat a couple of teams in the West convincingly, sort of set a marker that says, hey, the days of this average Eastern division are over. Nope, that hasn't happened.
Okay, Joe, let me throw a question to you then. Two wins in a row. I guess this is kind of an okay game thrown in by our quarterback. I guess our defense played pretty well, which is what a defense might be capable of when you have 36 minutes of possession. The Alouettes' average time of possession this season is less than 26 minutes, which is outrageous. It's 4 minutes worse, or 3 minutes worse than the next nearest team. Joe, let me ask you this. How happy should I and Alouettes fans be about this win?
I would withhold judgment until we know who's starting in week 14, because Montreal is a bye this week.
Mm-hmm.
Do they go back to Pipkin? If they do, they're showing a touch of common sense for once. If they go back to what's his name, well, then just enjoy these last 2 weeks, because they're not going to come around again for a while.
Okay, I'm going to give you a shot at this one, Doctor, and then I'm going to lay my hot take on y'all.
If they do not, you know, minus an injury, injury obviously changes the entire discussion. If Antonio Pipkin is not the starting quarterback in week 14, then essentially the front office's desire for selling tickets and generating national and international conversation has trumped any common sense about trying to win games. This has to be Pipkin's team going forward, whether they end up with 4 wins, 7 wins, or whatever it is that is the ultimate marker for this team. This kid deserves the chance to keep playing.
Wow. All right. I'll give you all my hot take on this one. All right. I think Johnny Canadian Football is going to start next week, and I think he should start. I think he should. You know, everybody's talking about, yeah, Pipkin does a great job. Okay, well, you know, since we're all throwing out stats so often these days, here we go. Pipkin, 18 of 27 for 242, two interceptions. He had some nice runs. He had some nice runs out there. He broke one off for, this says 28. Wow. I thought it was only about 25 or so. 28 yards, yeah. He got a rushing touchdown. Yeah, sure. But what, Manziel couldn't do this? Really? Seriously? I mean, this guy, you paid a lot of money for. This guy, or a lot of draft picks, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
This guy, you made way for. This guy will sell tickets. And I'm sorry, I just am not going to play the game of, oh yeah, like the CFL reported it in a write-up today. Now the Alouettes are only one game off in the win column of the playoffs. Come on now. I'm not going to buy that this is a playoff team or even a playoff contender. I think Hamilton showed this week that they're better, and I think Ottawa is better by default. These teams are going to make it. So I think Johnny should start. I don't think, you know, Pipkin may have that psychological edge among the teammates, right? The teammates may like him better and whatnot. But the truth is that we have so few weapons, these guys can't be choosy anyway. What Manziel has to do is figure out the one thing that no quarterback figured out until this game, which is how to put together a drive with one really good wide receiver.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what, like in this game, first quarter, nice 80-yard drive, couldn't score the touchdown. You know, perhaps Johnny might have for us, but with 2 weeks, 3 weeks of preparation behind him. But, you know, that was it. That was our one good drive, I swear, this whole season. I'm exaggerating. But that was what we need to see more often, because if this defense stays on the field, we have, as this game shows, we have a few legitimate players out there. But I think Johnny's going to start, and I want Johnny to start. Because
if you accept the idea that an injured player should not lose his starting spot, then there's an argument also to be made for, you know, Manziel getting back in the starting lineup. On the other hand, he wasn't doing anything much when he was the starting quarterback for a game and a half. So it's this very well may come down to, you know, if you think this season is salvageable, meaning that there's a chance at a playoff.
Right.
If you think this season is salvageable, is it better to go with the hot hand or the guy with more experience? If you think this season is over, then the question really does become, if Manziel's going to be the guy next year, if he's going to be the guy, then you have to start him and play him and give him as much experience as you can get. But that doesn't say much for Pipkin, you know, in terms of what you plan to do with him in 2019.
Well, Manziel, I'm going to let Joe get in on this in just a second, but I'm going to get in one more thing here. Manziel is probably going to be playing in that AAF next year anyway. So, you know, I don't really think he's the future. I just think he's the president.
I think his contract requires him to be back in Canada next year.
Wow. Wow.
I think it is.
Even if he doesn't play in the NFL?
Yep. It was a two-year deal.
Wow.
Before they agreed to the option window again. So he's under a contract for next year. Now, whether or not he comes back is maybe dependent on how, his behavior. If that gets out of line, they're going to cut him right away, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. And B, is it going to be worth what they're going to potentially pay him if they decide he's not the guy? And is it worth the distraction of having him around if they decide Pipkin's the guy? Those are the couple scenarios I could see for him not coming back.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but getting back to the main point about who should play next week, I just wanted to get in one more thing. Look, I would argue that it's not even about the future of the present or who's better with the team or da-da-da-da-da-da. It's this. It doesn't matter who's the quarterback to some extent for this team, because this team's not going to win on offense. Look, Boris Beedy had 14 points this week. Okay, the defense had 3 quarterback sacks. And again, like I say, when that defense was, you know, allowed to have a decent amount of time off the field, they can produce. We've had individual stars all season. You know, we have, I think the Alouettes have 3 of the top 6 in tackles in the league. You know, now a lot of that is just because they're on the field so damn much. But, I mean, these are talented guys out there. It's just, it's inhumane what they've done until this game. So, again, I would say so little of this team, this 3-6 team, is about the quarterback. You know, it's just not. So I say Manziel. I say they're going to start him, and I say yay. Let's move on from our favorite American player in Canada. Wow. To the squeaky wheel gets the grease, literally. To our second game, Saskatchewan Rough Riders 31, Winnipeg Blue Bombers 23. Well, I'm going to do one of my favorite questions that I always ask in situations like this. Joe, what happened?
Well, I didn't actually get to watch the game because that's the day our internet decided to crap out for the entire day. There always seems to be something going on over Labor Day weekend that makes me miss this game, or at least most of it. There's been fishing trips. There's been, hey, I invited a guest over for 3:00. Oh, well, that's nice. That's when kickoff is. That sort of thing. But this year it was like, just, nope, you don't get it. So I listened to Bob Irving and Doug Brown the whole time. I should have just taken the hit and stayed away entirely, but it was an enjoyable experience to tell about the last 5 minutes anyway. So that's what happened.
Oh, okay.
The universe was trying to tell me, don't watch, don't listen, you're not going to like this, and I was too stubborn to listen.
Okay, so what is the universe trying to tell me when my cable provider cuts out my internet, you know, on the day of a podcast? that I'm not fit to be the host of this show. Let me ask you one other question, Joe. Here we go. Since we're on this roll with hot takes, is it time for Strevolution?
No.
Still no. What if they lose next week?
No.
Wow.
Because okay. Here's why.
Okay.
Have you taken a look at the points for column in the standings anytime
lately?
Oh, yeah. Lately?
Yep. Yep. Nope. I know who's number one. I know who's number one.
Yep. And I'm just looking, unless Calgary scores 44 their next game, they won't catch the Bombers 4 points scored over 11. So.
Oh, okay.
The big difference here is look at the points against column now.
Right. Right.
And look at them over the last 3 weeks. Points against the Bombers, 44, 39, 31. Now, granted, there was a bunch of points given, handed away in week 11, but still, that's telling me that this isn't all about Matt Nichols. This is about, dear God, stop somebody for God's sake.
Well, yes, Joe, I would agree. I would have agreed until this week. I wanted to get this in there, and I would like Dr. Rouge to comment on the Rough Riders, who over on his blog, he has power ranked number 2 right now in the league. But, Joe, look, you can say that, and yes, we know that this defense goes for the big play, gives up a lot of points in the process. But look, it was the defense and the special teams that killed it for Saskatchewan this week. Look, they got a touchdown on special teams with the Kieran Moore punt return. They got an interception return to the 1 yard line, I think it was, from Matt Elam. They got a blocked field goal, and they ended the game on an interception. Okay? They got turnovers off your Blue Bombers, who apparently can't afford to do that if they're going to give up so many points on the defense. But in this particular game, it was not the defense. Now, yes, I do believe Winnipeg's going to win next week, but I did promise the doctor I wanted to go to him. Doc, Saskatchewan, number 2 in the poll this week. Do you see this until the end of the year? Are they just getting started over there in Saskatchewan?
Part of it is they might be getting started, and the other part of it might be that maybe Edmonton and Winnipeg are no better than 9-9, maybe 10-8 if they get a little bit lucky. And if that's the case and Saskatchewan wins 11 games, they're hosting a playoff game. So I think it is – look, if Edmonton can't score in the second half and Winnipeg can't stop anybody over 4 quarters – why not Saskatchewan finishing second in the West? Hmm. Why not?
Okay, you buying that assessment, Joe?
I could see it. I mean, they've been a different team since that Claros came back. Claros isn't doing anything spectacular, but he doesn't have to. He just has to be good, and their defenses and special teams are going to do the rest.
Well, he's not lighting it up, but they crushed it in the – I mean, the defense crushed it in the first half. They just waited for him to get going. And sure enough, you know, Zach controlled that fourth quarter. You know, 14 points in that fourth quarter. But, yeah, what is it, 17-14 at half? It was 17-7 at one point, I believe. You know, the defense was generating everything in that first half for Saskatchewan. They just needed to let him catch up. I caught this on the Greencast the other day, and I thought it was a good point, so I just repeat it here. This is coming from John Fraser. One of the co-hosts of that podcast, who said, look, people got to stop this narrative about, you know, Zach Collaros returning back to his form of 2-3 years ago, because that Zach Collaros doesn't exist anymore. You know, this is a new guy, and he is an average quarterback who has veteran presence in the clutch, but he's not going to light up the scoreboard anymore. He's not going to run up the stats. Like Mr. Mazzoli over there in Hamilton. You know, he's just going to be a competent quarterback. So, I don't know, we'll see. I'm liking Saskatchewan right now, but we still got a lot of season left. So, we'll see if they can keep rolling on this. Let's see. Okay, how about this one? Really, in some respects, for me, the game of the week. Calgary Stampeders 23, Edmonton Eskimos 20. One of these really, like, grinded out, grueling games. Perhaps overshadowed a little bit by some scary injuries in this game. Bo Levi Mitchell was knocked out of the game for a little while, came back with a leg brace on. Darrell Walker went out, did not come back into the game, and he's out for how long now? One of you guys was telling me this.
Yeah, Jason Moss, the head coach, right, said a few hours ago, and again, we're obviously recording on a Wednesday night, he said a few hours ago that Walker will miss several weeks. He's anticipating, though, that Walker will be back before the season is over. So what do you want to say, a month at least he's out?
A month that Edmonton cannot afford if they don't want to go 9-9, 8-10, as you suggested. Also, Stamps receiver Kamar Jordan, number one in targets, receptions, and yardage for the almost no-name receiving core over there in Calgary that's getting the job done this season, was carried out of this game. And I'm not even certain he returned to the sidelines during this game. We have not heard anything else on Jordan. Okay, Joe, let me ask you this one. Did you catch this game?
I did.
Okay, how'd you like it?
It was hard for me to tell who to root for, honestly, because at this point, the Bombers aren't going to catch the Stampeders no matter what, so that was kind of the way I ended up leading, but I kind of have a bit of a soft spot for Edmonton, having to deal with all these injuries over the past few years, but yep. Edmonton losing helps the Bombers if the Bombers ever get their stuff together, which, well, God only knows that they will. But it was a good game. It was an entertaining game, and it was anybody's game right up until the end. So when it's two teams that I don't have a huge passion for or against, that's all I can ask for. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so 23-20. Like I said before, this was a grinded out game. I was looking at some of the numbers because, you know, watching this thing is incredible enough, and then actually, like, getting your suspicions confirmed is incredible. Nick Taylor had 10 tackles for the Eskimos. Alex Bazzi had 2 sacks, and the Eskimos had 4 altogether. Alex Singleton even outdid Taylor with 12 tackles, including 1 on special teams. Together, there were 6 turnovers in the game and 6 sacks, but it didn't seem particularly sloppy. My question for you, Doc, is this, because I was thinking about this. Can they possibly play like this again next week? Or do you expect to see a really wide-open game, despite the fact that both of these teams are going to be a couple of receivers down?
You know, my concern, if I'm Edmonton looking at this week, is, all right, our team has now lost 3 out of 4. And in the second half of those 3 losses, our offense has scored 0 points or 3 points. What the heck is going on? You know, there's all this talk about, you know, Mike Riley moving the ball up and down the field, and that is indeed happening. But 0 points or 3 points in the second half. And again, those losses on the road to BC, on the road against Calgary, you know, you are not going to be successful. And then on the road at Hamilton as well. You're simply not going to get it done if you cannot score points in the second half. I could see with maybe a little less emotion this week. It's not the holiday day. It's, you know, a back-to-back game. I agree. I'm not sure you're going to see the same kind of heavyweight fight that we saw on Labor Day. And if that's the case, that probably benefits Calgary.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Like they need more benefits.
They needed it.
Right. They need more benefits. Exactly. But excellent game this week. I agree completely. The Eskimos did not need to lose this game. I think next week is really important for them. They're going to have to pull out a miracle at home against Calgary, because it's not even so much that they're going to catch Calgary at this point, because they're not going to. But they can't afford to be like losing ground as Saskatchewan is heating up, as they seem to have finally put the pieces into place over there in Saskatchewan. I mean, they're competing for division games now. So I'm not sure what they're going to do. Perhaps they can make a trade Are there any receivers out there on the trading block?
Chris Rainey.
For example. Nice feed. Thank you for the dunk there. That was very nice, Dr. Roosh. Right, okay. So the weekend closed off with, as I noted before, a game that was pretty good for about 2.5 quarters or so, maybe even 3 quarters if you want to stretch the definition a little bit. Hamilton Tiger Cats 42, Toronto Argonauts 28. The Argonauts hung around for a while, but the Tiger Cats put it away in the fourth. How indicative of forget it. I always torment Joe. I'm going to torment you, Dr. Roosh. What happened?
You can't win if your defense isn't getting enough done. You know, the other thing to think about with this team, we talk about Edmonton scoring 0 or 3 points, you know, in the second half of their three most recent losses. Toronto has won 3 games this year by a combined 5 points. So, you know, even when they're winning, they're not necessarily beating people, convincingly. The defense is far worse than anybody imagined. There are going to be the obvious growing pains with whether the long-term quarterback would have been Franklin or Bethel Thompson. Toronto's reaching the point where they don't get a win this week and then start generating some momentum before they get some pretty significant games in terms of the upper echelon teams towards the end of September. You know, you might be looking at the end of the line for this team this week if they get smoked again, because they just might not be able to do more than mail it in after this week.
Yeah, the Argos defense put in a particularly bad performance this week. No exaggeration, one of the worst of the year. No answer for Alex Green. No answer for Luke Tasker and Brandon Banks, who combined for a ridiculous 17 receptions for 278 yards and 3 touchdowns. My question for Joe is, how much of this is Hamilton and how much of this is Toronto?
I think we'll figure that out over the next couple weeks, especially next week. But at the same time, it was nice to see Hamilton take a game and run with it and put an opponent away again. It's been a while, I feel like, since we've seen that. They did beat Edmonton near the end last game they played, which was last week. But I felt like earlier in the season, they let a lot of opportunities go. Where they had chances to put the game away late and they couldn't do it.
Yes.
So it's nice to see them just take it and run with it and put it away instead of letting the other team linger.
Yeah, for that first half of the season, I think the Tiger Cats probably led the league in mental errors, although the Alouettes are pretty high up there. I don't want to put the nail in the coffin or anything, Doctor. I don't want to put too fine a point on it. But you talk about the defense, but here you go. I mean, geez, if I were an Argos fan, I'd be concerned about this offense. I mean, yeah, sure, you're bringing Daron Carter in, but how much can he help a guy? I mean, here's McLeod. I think the McLeod has fallen here. 14 of 29 for 163 yards, 1 interception, 0 TDs. James Wilder can't get it going. If they know that this dude can't throw more than 20 yards, I think his long was 20 yards in this game. And then you've got behind him, or to the side of him, I should say, you've got the biggest disappointment in the CFL this season, probably, in Franklin. I mean, what are you going to do here?
Yeah, it's not a good scenario. I mean, the first game of the season, they lost in Saskatchewan, and the argument was, well, you know what, we gave the front line players almost all of the exhibition games off, so in reality, this was almost like playing an exhibition game. Okay, fine, whatever. I didn't buy it, but that was the rationale.
I remember.
The next week they get absolutely destroyed by Calgary. Ricky Ray gets hurt, and the entire complexion of the season, you know, at that point changes. You know, and remember, we talk about Toronto upset Calgary, won the Grey Cup, and all that kind of jazz. But you know, this team needed to win its last 2 games of the regular season last year, or at best, they finished second in the division, and if they had lost both of those games, there was a chance that Hamilton could have caught them for second place. So, you know, it's not like Toronto's fall has been from like a Calgary kind of perch. You know, they were 9-9 last year. They needed a great drive to beat Saskatchewan in the Eastern Final, and you know, they then had two tremendous plays, one on offense, one on defense, to upset a team that was clearly better than them. So, you know, maybe we shouldn't be surprised that this team has fallen, but boy, it's fallen far, far, you know, deeper than I think anyone expected. First phone call I'd be making if I'm Mark Trestman or Jim Popp, I'm calling Corey Chamberlain and saying, hey, would you like to come back and be defensive coordinator again next
year? Wow.
That's the first phone call I'm making.
Well, yeah, this is, I mean, honestly speaking, this is one of the flukiest one of the flukiest Grey Cup winners in one of the flukiest Grey Cups that I can remember. So yeah, I think you're right. The fall from grace is not huge. But, wow, I mean, at the beginning of the season, folks were talking about, ooh, what a 1-2 at quarterback, and you know, Trestman's working the magic, and da 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 da, and now it's just wow. I mean, this team, if Montreal actually strings a few wins together, this team could be number 9 in the CFL by the end of the season, as they are in your power pool this week, I believe. over at your website here, let me get in the plug. Yes, it's AJM. broadcasteducator.wordpress.com. You got to get a redirect or something, Dr. Rouge. You got to get drrouge.com or something. And just seriously, just spell it. I'm sure it's free. Just spell it out. Just take it. dr-rouge.com. That would also work. And then just redirect it to this site, because that's a mouthful.
That would work.
AJM Educator. AJMBroadcastEducator.wordpress.com for the Dr. Rouge Power Rankings for the week. Right. Let's put a bow on last week. Let's go on to next week. Shall we, gents?
We should.
We shall.
All right. Let's take this brief bumper, and we'll be back after this. CFL podcast. We're going to talk next week's games. There should be a name for this week in general. I know you have the Banjo Bowl, but this should be like the Labor Day Classic 2 or something. There should be a name for this slate of games this week. Perhaps there will be when there's a 10th team in the league. First game of the week, we've got some very interesting lines on these games. The Ottawa Redblacks are a 1.5-point underdog at BC Lions. Now, the BC Lions are going to be coming off the bye. They're playing on the West Coast. This is a night game. The smart money says BC. You've got to figure that Wally Buono has a good game plan with that extra week. However, I would also note that Solomon Alamimiam will not be coming back. And in fact, he will be having the wrist injury of last year reevaluated. I would be surprised if we saw him back at all for the rest of the season. As for this game, I think I'll take the Red Blacks to win outright. What the hell? Live dangerously. Joe, what do you got?
I think any pick in this game is living dangerously.
Exactly.
Ottawa is either going to score 40 points or 14. So I'm taking BC because that's a common sense pick in this, even though nothing Ottawa does this season makes any sense to begin with.
Okay, Joe, you know what? You just swayed my opinion. So, you know, maybe I'll just edit this down, but you just swayed my opinion. So you know what? I'm going to go with the tie. I'm going to go with the tie in this game. Dr. Rouge, what do you like?
Not going with a tie.
We have not had – somebody pointed – one of the TSN crew pointed this out during a game this week. We have yet to have an overtime game yet this season.
Mm-hmm.
And last season, Ottawa, at this point, we were at a record-breaking pace.
Anyway. Ottawa has this frustrating ability or inability maybe to play down to the talent of the team across from them. Logic says – Ottawa wins this game just because they're the better team. Logic says Ottawa's bouncing back, and so they, you know, they know that they've got to get a win. Logic says that Ottawa knows Hamilton is breathing right down their necks now, and all of a sudden that comfortable lead isn't so comfortable anymore.
I know where you're going.
I'm taking Ottawa to win this game. Oh, boy, I don't have any confidence in that pick at all.
Oh, great. Okay, I thought you were going to reverse it and go BC.
because this has like a 3-point game written all over it, and it might be one of those where the field goal at the end of the game and everybody looks across the field from each other and goes, boy, there's 3 hours of our lives we'll never get back. It might not be a good game.
Wow.
Well, I guess harsh. If it's a good game, it's 3 hours of your life you're not going to get back, but yeah.
Well, yeah, but you don't regret it so much.
Exactly. I'll go with Ottawa, but boy, I don't have a lot of confidence in that pick.
Well, look at it this way. Maybe you'll be lucky and your internet will cut out. And you won't be able to.
This is true. And then other people have to tell me if there are any. If there are any.
Rouges.
Thank you.
Or any missed Rouge opportunities.
Yeah, well, Medlock's not in this game. Quiet, Joe.
Oh, shots fired. All right, okay. Let's go to the second one. Shame. I'm going to let Joe. Possibly retaliate and go first on this one. We got Hamilton Tiger Cats, 5-point favorites at Toronto Argonauts. Now, as we understand, Jalen Saunders is out for the year. Is that correct?
Yes, that's what we're hearing. That was a nasty injury last week.
Yeah. Oh boy. Yeah. I'm talking about gnarly injuries this weekend. Wow. That was one of them. The Tiger Cats sure have a lot of weapons on offense. Anyway, Joe, where are you going on this game?
I've got Hamilton, and I think they're going to make that 5 points look small.
Yeah.
It feels like they've got it together. Toronto doesn't have it together. I just see Hamilton feeling like they could take charge in that division and catch up to Ottawa after Ottawa loses the night before. I could see this one getting kind of ugly.
Okay. All right. What do you
also see the Toronto kicker scoring a lot of rouges to make Dr. Rouge at least be somewhat happy about the game?
It's gonna be about 31-5 with 5 rouges, right?
For Toronto. And he would take that and he'd be happy.
You guys are just brutalizing my team tonight. Holy cow.
Well, yes, but we're venerating the Rouge.
This is true.
What are you liking in this game? How are your hometown playing Argonauts going to do with a 5-point underdog?
Logic tells me that Hamilton is ready to take control of, if not the Eastern Division, at least to really put some pressure on Ottawa. Logic tells me that Hamilton has the momentum. Logic tells me that Toronto is struggling. This, my friends, is the upset of the week. The Argos win.
Wow. Okay. How many games in a row has Hamilton won now?
Two.
Okay, because one of the things that I've discovered through my logic, Commander Spock over there, through my logic is that putting together a winning streak – if you're not named the Calgary Stampeders in the CFL, is pretty damn difficult this season. I don't think anybody's put more than 3 wins together. So I'm going to say the Tiger Cats win, but I'm going to go with Joe. I'm going to say they win in a blowout. Yeah, we'll let the doctor stand alone on this one. Yeah, Hamilton wins handily. I think, they're just putting it together, but I also think that next week it's going to be damn tough to win that 4th in a row, no matter who they're playing. So next week I don't like them so much. How about this one, though? Here's arguably your hottest team in the CFL, the Saskatchewan Roughriders, 3.5-point underdogs at Winnipeg. Really believing in that Banjo Bowl mystique. Joe, are you? You're going.
I'm going. And the amount of adult beverages I'll have after the game will probably be determined by the outcome of the game. And I believe I'm in for a lot of them, so I'm not liking the Bombers' chances.
Okay, are your drinks after the game going to be determined at all by the amount of drinks you had during the game?
Well, I don't like to pay $20 a beer at the stadium, so I will be fresh and ready to go. How long that lasts depends on how well the Bombers do, and I'm not planning on them doing all that well.
But it is 20 Canadian dollars, Joe.
Yeah. And I'm slightly exaggerating that price, but I don't know how much. I know it's double digits, though.
No, I'm sure it's about 12, 13. It's got to be in that area. I mean, it's a good 10 bucks for a crappy beer here in Anaheim. And I know prices are got to be comparable up there in Canada. So, okay, Doctor, what are your thoughts here? Saskatchewan, 3.5-point underdogs at Winnipeg.
Cue the Beatles. You say you want a Strevolution. It's getting close.
Oh, boy.
It's getting close. If this team loses this week badly, you know, it's one thing if you lose, you know, 28-24, you're in the game, Nichols plays well, et cetera. If this thing goes downhill this week, and I'm sorry, Joe, I'm fearing it's going to. I think now the question becomes, all right, if the crossover looks to be probably kind of sort of maybe you say, okay, let's go with Nichols. He's the veteran guy. But I have to wonder if that locker room is starting to divide a little bit. Let's face it, fairly or not, somebody is going to take the or be the recipient of the finger of blame if this season continues downhill for Winnipeg, and it's probably going to be the quarterback, whether it should be or not. We know that's probably what's going to happen. I think Saskatchewan wins, and I think the pressure to seriously consider Chris Streveler merely as a give it another look, try somebody, let's do something different. You know, that might not be logical, but that might be where they go.
And they seem to be under a lot of pressure. I don't know if either of you two subscribe to The Athletic, but Kirk Benton always puts out a fantastic article each week. And he's making mention this week that Wade Miller does not seem to be happy, and heads are going to roll over there. Things don't change fast. My read on this is about the same as it was last week, Doc, is that Mike O'Shea is very loyal to his players. Mm-hmm. And he's also very loyal to his coaches. And Kyle Walters obviously is not getting involved and making changes on the player front or the coaching front either. So above them, the next step is Wade Miller. So if there's going to be a change made, it may be a wholesale change and not just Strebler.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Could be. You know, well, and if that happens, you know, when Mike O'Shea took over that team, let's face it, Winnipeg was a bad football team that he inherited. And they are have much more depth. They're a better team top to bottom. But, oh boy, it just looks like the floor is just coming out from this team this season. Somebody's going to take the blame.
And there have been seasons like this in the Bombers' past, too. I was talking to my host for this upcoming weekend, and he says it feels like this is a 2003 or 2008 where there's no real good explanation as to why the team comes out flat that year. Mm-hmm. Everything seems to be in place for things to go well, and then it just doesn't.
It's just a lot of points being given up on defense. I mean, Nichols is not lighting it up, but I was going to say this, Joe. It could be worse. You might have Drew Willie still kicking around on your roster, so just be thankful he's gone. I'm going to go with the Bombers here. I'm just going to say the numbers even out. Like I say, I'm a big believer in the fact that it's just real tough to put together a win streak in the CFL right now. And the Riders have won 3 in a row. The Riders might score a lot of points this week, but like I say, a lot of points were generated by the defense against Calgary when they scored 40 points. A lot of points were generated by the defense. Heck, in that game, they had a special teams touchdown, a defensive touchdown, and the defense putting the ball on the one. Kind of a similar situation last week. So the Riders could score a lot of points against the Bombers, who give up a lot of points, but I don't really see the evidence. I can't believe that the Bombers' offense will give up as many points as they did last week. So I'm going to say the Bombers stick it out and they win. It's going to be a close one. And I don't think that the Riders have anything to worry about as far as, like, losing the edge in the West on second place. Because next week they got Ottawa, then they get the Argos after that, then they get the Alouettes after that. So they'll put together a nice little three-game winning streak after the Banjo Bowl as well.
One more thing before we move on here.
Go ahead.
I feel like this game could be determined, or at least the general course of it could be determined as early as the first quarter. Because I feel like this fan base in Winnipeg is going to either get right behind a team that jumps out to an early lead and sticks it to the Riders a few times. But if a couple of bad things happen and all of a sudden it's a 10-0 or 14-0 game in favor of the Riders, you're going to hear that fan base pull away from this team just as fast as they can, be either silent or very negative toward the team for the rest of the game. It could swing that early. I mean, if they keep trading punches, mm-hmm. and it gets later in the game, that's one thing. But if there's a big swing early in the game, whoever's got that momentum early may just carry that all the way home.
So you believe that the Boo Birds are going to come out early during the Banjo Bowl, potentially, Joe? Wow.
Well, a three-game losing streak and a loss on Labor Day and then a bad start to the Banjo Bowl, I could see this thing spiraling. Either way, they will get behind them if they jump out to an early lead. But it could spiral straight downhill. And if it does, and if it's an ugly, ugly game, we may see some wholesale changes altogether.
And you may see a lot of those $13 beers being bought as well.
The Rum Hut will be having no matter what. So I'm going to say yes to that.
All right. Here we go. The last one could be the game of the week again. Calgary Stampeders, 3-point favorites. Obviously, Vegas and the bookies, like your line of thinking, Doctor. At Edmonton, like I say, both teams could be a couple of receivers down for this game. Doc, what are you thinking?
Look, Calgary can be beaten, but boy, I'll tell you, every team that takes a shot seems to fall flat when it comes time. Saskatchewan, obviously, being the lone exception, but let's face it, Saskatchewan lost to Calgary on that very same field 3 weeks earlier, and that talk about a game that was over in the first quarter.
Yeah.
A team that plays four solid quarters like Edmonton did last week is going to stick around with Calgary. You know, 3 years ago, Calgary had that offense. If they wanted to score 70 points a game, they probably could have. They were just that dynamic and that good. You know, they're not going to score 70 points a game, obviously. Joe made a good point earlier that, you know, as many points as they are scoring, you know, Winnipeg is scoring a whole heck of a lot more. I just don't see Edmonton, you know, having one of those, all right, let's get this done. We got to find a way to win. Calgary's that kind of team that, you know, you push them around a couple of times, you push them around a couple of times. You start getting a little bit confident, you know, maybe, and then bam, they hit you with that haymaker. And sometimes the haymaker comes at the very last play of the game. And it's kind of what happened, you know, last
right
with the drive that led to the field goal. I like Calgary in this game just because, you know, right now I don't think Edmonton will have a consecutive four quarters performance like they did last week.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Joe? Edmonton too thin for this game?
Yeah, I would say so. Picking Calgary is just the smart math move. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do it, and I'm not going to worry about it.
Yeah, I think I'll take the Stamps, probably minus the 3 as well. To address one of Doc's points earlier, the Stamps will play the Riders one more time in week 19, but unfortunately the Stamps will probably have things all wrapped up by that point, so they might be playing the B team in that game. So unfortunately, we won't get to see these two teams again, probably not until the playoffs. But whenever they do meet again, I'm taking the under. I'll tell you right now, I'm taking the under. Two best, funnest, most interesting defenses in the CFL right now. Wow. Wow, that would be a great game to see next week. Unfortunately, not coming up until late October. Right. Let's get out of here. Dr. Rouge, I'm going to give you the first goodbye because I'm going to let Joe pump us up a little bit more for his trip that we're not taking.
I know. I sort of you can tell he doesn't have the same kind of, I'm going to watch my team play. You know, you can see that sort of disappointment or hear that disappointment in his voice. my takeaway for the week, knee injuries are so cruel. You know, I mean, I know head injuries are more dangerous and can have far more serious long-term health repercussions. But watching the number of those players last week with that, just that gift of mobility and speed to come to just a crashing halt because of a knee injury, it just seems so cruel. And let's hope this week your team wins, your team loses, whatever. Let's hope we get a whole lot of guys walking on the field healthy and walking off the field healthy too. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and of course Zach Kolaris, right? I mean, this is mm-hmm. you know, this changed the destiny of that whole team and this player a couple of years ago after a knee injury. Okay, Joe, tell us one more time about how great it's going to be. Tell us when you're going. Tell us, are you going to be back next week for the Rouge, White, and Blue?
Yes, I will be back in time for the Rouge, White, and Blue next week. Okay. I am leaving on Friday night. I may not get there until Saturday morning, depending on the whims of airline travel and such things, because it got bumped from an evening flight to it's dark and nobody else is probably going to be on the plane with you flight.
Oh, so. The red eye. The red eye. Classic.
Gotta love it.
Classic. Yes,
that wasn't the plan, but that ended up being the plan. So.
Oh, right. Do you know anything about your seats?
No, not a thing.
Okay. Don't know where you're sitting for the game. Okay. And
For the game? For the game? Same spot as last year. I think it's section 203. It's up in the upper deck, closer to the, I believe that's the south end of the field. Okay. Really not a bad seat in that house, except for maybe end zone corners at the, on the lower level. So I'm happy with the seats, and I'll just be happy to be there, even if it's not the result I'm going to want.
Okay, now you're also retrieving promotional items for yourself and your co-hosts while you're up there, are you not?
For my co-hosts, yes.
Yes. Oh, okay, not for yourself. Okay.
Well,
you'll probably get trinkets at the game, I would assume. Now, Dr. Rouge, I'm expecting a picture of you in your Diversity of Strength t-shirt upon arrival. And I never post pictures of myself anywhere, and I'm going to do it. So, in any case, Joe, bon voyage.
Yay. Like I said, it's Canadian Money Day, which means the trip is right around the corner, and it feels a whole lot more real now than it did even 5 hours ago.
Great. All right. Well, Joe's going to have an awesome time this weekend, and he will be back next week on the Rouge, White, and Blue CFL podcast. So for my co-host, Mr. Pritchard and Dr. Rouge, I'm Oz Davis, and we'll talk to you next week. Enjoy the games.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.